Abram was a giant of a man as an example of faith. But you know, like James of old reminds us about Elijah, he was but a man. The Lord had called him in grace unto himself out of the land of idolatry in the air of the Chaldees. And after a delay at Haran, Abraham, we read, departed. He obeyed the word of the Lord, and to that land he went that God would show him. And in obeying, Abraham was to have those promises that God had made unto him. It's in that land of promise that Abraham moves from place to place. He sojourns there. It is there that he builds the altar unto God, and where he worships, claiming that land in doing so. It is there that the Canaanite were to witness that this man was different. This man didn't worship the gods of wood and of stone, but rather he worshipped by the sacrifice. And the animal was taken, and the animal was slain, and its blood was shed as an appeasement to a holy God. However, the opening words of verse 10 denote a change that comes about. And there is the mention in that verse of Egypt. And by way of preface concerning Egypt, it's the land in the Scriptures that stands for the world. And for the child of God, it is the wrong place to have an alliance with. Now, when I say world, I mean worldliness, the spirit of the world. And that is what Egypt stands for. And the believer is not to have an alliance with the world or the spirit of it. That is, unless God says otherwise. And you know, God did say otherwise in a couple of instances. If you turn over to Genesis chapter 46, in the words of verse 3, we read in verse 2 that God spake unto Israel, that is, unto Jacob. Verse 3 it says, and he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. So there's an example where God permitted his child and the family of Jacob to go down into Egypt because he had a purpose in doing so. He would make a great nation out of them there in the land of Goshen. The same can be detected as the message which Joseph received in Matthew chapter 2. For there we read the angel told him to take Mary and the Christ child and to flee to Egypt. God was preserving his people in both these instances. But ordinarily, and for the most part, God's people are to stay away from it. It's summed up in the words of Isaiah 31, verse 1. You do well to just listen to these. Woe to them that go down to Egypt for help and stay on horses and trust in chariots, because they are many. And in horsemen, because they are very strong, but they look not unto the Holy One of Israel, neither seek the Lord. God says, through his servant, woe. Woe unto his people that go down to Egypt for help. And the example is used of the horses and the chariots, because there are many. If the believer finds themselves relying on the spirit of Egypt, or this world, and the only solution is to get as quickly out of it as possible and not to go back again. And that is the lesson, men and women, that we are to learn through this passage in Abram's life in Genesis chapter 12. A man who's called of God. A man who has left his homeland. A man who has arrived now in that land of promise in Canaan. A man who is worshiping God there. I pray that we are not guilty or will not be guilty of what Abram did in forsaking the worship of God. Let me show you firstly here the circumstances. The question rightly will be asked. What brought this about? What was it that led Abram to go down into Egypt, as we've read there at the start of verse 10? I want you to consider that there was a trial. And There will be trials for God's people as they traverse through this old world. He's in the land that called them, that God had called them to. It is the place where God appeared unto him and assured him that he's greater than any of the Canaanites that were already in the land. He's in the land that has been promised unto his seed. Not only would they walk through it, but they would possess it. He's in the place of communion with God and of public worship, for God knew Abram to be a father and a master who taught his household of the justice and the judgments of God. God knew him to be such a man. Wherever he goes, the altar is raised. The animal is slain. The blood is shed. God is well pleased. But isn't the lesson that even though we might be in a place of blessing, yet that doesn't preclude trials coming upon us. And in those trials of life, it is not for us to think that God's blessing is stopped. Indeed, trials are blessings in the sky. They are for the purpose of strengthening us and drawing us closer unto himself. James chapter 1 and the words of verse 2, my brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into diverse temptations or trials, knowing this, that the trying of your faith worketh patience. Count it all joy. That mightn't be the language that we would use when we're in a particular trial or adverse circumstance, but it's the language that God uses. For Abram, the trial of famine, being in the land, was a new experience. Remember, he has come from the Ur of the Chaldees. The Ur of the Chaldees was served by the great river Euphrates. It watered the land. The same in which the Nile would water the land of Egypt. But the land of Canaan was different. As the nation of Israel were reminded in Deuteronomy chapter 11 and verse 11, it says, but the land whither ye go to possess it is a land of hills and valleys, and drinketh water of the rain of heaven. A land which the Lord thy God careth for. The eyes of the Lord thy God are always upon it from the beginning of the year even unto the end of the year. It was watered by the rains from heaven. The early and the latter rain. But now a famine has come upon this land. And you just think that Abraham already had to deal with many trials. This is by no means the first one. His wife was still barren, unable to bear children. And the older they got year after year, then the greater that trial seemed to increase. He was to leave the land for another land, the destination of which was unknown to him. Hebrews chapter 11 tells us that he went out not knowing whither he went. That was a trial. God means us to walk by faith, not by sight. He was leaving family and friends behind. What's more, once he started that journey, his company with him was to be diminished. Because at Aram, we read that Terah, his father, died. Was that not a severe trial for Abram? For only Sarah and Lot were now with him. And within a very short space of time, Lot also would separate from his uncle Abram. Then in Canaan, he had no dwelling place. He sojourned from place to place. Furthermore, there were the Canaanites in the land who were idolaters, and they were known for their great wickedness and for their cruelty. And now on top of all that, there's the famine where bread had failed. What was he to do? Can you identify with Abram? You see, our reasoning can be no different from his. For in such a circumstance, in such a trial, we will go down to Egypt for a time. For we consider that obeying God is all right so long as all is going well. But come trouble, come that trial or that difficulty, then that thinking goes out the window. And we'll have to go down and we'll have to follow the spirit of the world again. For understand that into these circumstances, this trial comes the matter of trust. And here's the nub of the issue. Comes the matter of trust. In the midst of this famine and trial, Abram doesn't trust in God. He starts to trust in himself and in his own thinking and his own resources. And so that's why we read what we do in the rest of verse 10. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. He trusts in himself. He turns to the world for provision, for help. And the world does provide for its own and for those that are willing to go its own way. But it is in the last place that a believer should trust in or look to for in a time of great need or help. It's the last place. Abraham did wrong. He should have trusted in the Lord, for God had not brought him this way to starve him. And he would provide for him as he did for Elijah in the time of famine in the same land just years later, as he directed him to the brook Cherith, as he directed him, as we understood and heard, the boys and girls heard it on Wednesday night, to the widow of Zarephath. And Abraham would prove this same lesson even in Mount Moriah, because there he named him Jehovah Jireh. The Lord will provide. This was an opportunity for Abraham, given to him to prove his trust was in the Lord and to witness it before the ungodly, the Canaanite in the land. But instead, he trusted in himself. Instead, he strayed from the place of public worship and blessing. And he sojourned in the land of Egypt. My dear listener this morning, I wonder in your time of trial, whatever that may be, and the circumstances that prevail particularly upon you at this time and further afield in the province, who are you really trusting in? That's a question that only you can answer, and God knows your heart. How you answer that, and the honesty that will be even in answering that question, who really are you trusting in? Because I can't stay here. I've got to go on a bit further. I've got to show you the consequences. You see, we can't really point the finger at Abram at his reasonings, or even indeed his actions, because we may have done the very same ourselves, and maybe we have done it in our own life. Yet we're left in no doubt that it was a wrong decision. In these following verses, there are the consequences that are to be noted. These steps are downward, as can be noted from the words of verse 10. You might not have seen it, but it says, "And there was a famine in the land, and Abraham went down into Egypt." If you're in the habit of underlining verses in the scriptures in the Bible that you have, underline it there. He went down into Egypt. Now, of course, that's setting the geographical landscape. From where he was, he went down geographically into Egypt. But men and women, listen, it also has an application spiritually. And so it will always be for any believer, perceived to be a giant in the faith or not, if they trust in themselves, if they trust in others instead of God. What are the consequences? Let's look at them. There was unbelief on his part. Abram was not to be blinded to reality. Neither does God expect us to be. Humanly speaking, he needed to get food. He couldn't expect it from the Canaanites because they were in the same circumstance, and after all, he was a stranger among them. But while there are ample reasons to justify his action, yet his action evidenced a failure of belief in God. And therefore, in God's eyes, it was still unbelief. The difficulty is not that we see the circumstances. The difficulty is that we fail to see the whole picture. And part of that picture includes the God who is the God of all circumstances. I can illustrate it by the actions of Peter in the New Testament as he stepped out of that boat to walk to the Savior. His problem was not that he saw the waves or felt the wind and its danger. He understood that as he stood in the boat. He understood that before he stepped out onto those waters. The problem was he had got his eyes off Christ in the storm, and he began to look at only the circumstances that were around him. And what do we read? He became afraid. He began to sink. The 10 spies are also another illustration. They only saw the circumstances of the giants and the great walled cities. But Joshua and Caleb, they saw the whole picture. They looked at the greatness of their God, and they believed that they could overcome. And so they encouraged Israel to go forward. Is unbelief your problem today? Let me just, before I go any further, emphasize to you, unbelief, you know, is not just a little sin. Maybe there's some people think that as, we could sin greater ways than unbelief. I want to try and banish that thought from your heart and mind. If you turn over just a few chapters, I've been reading this myself, Genesis chapter 18, and it's a time where Abraham, he gives that hospitality to the unknown angels. Angels come unto him unawares, as Hebrews tells us. And it's that time which is one of the angels being the pre-incarnate appearance of Christ. The Lord himself gives a message that Abram had already heard, that he was going to bless him with a son. And he says this to Sarah, verse 10. And he said, I will certainly return unto thee according to the time of life. And lo, Sarah, thy wife, shall have a son. And Sarah heard it in the tent door which was behind him. Now, Abram and Sarah were old, well stricken in age, and it ceased to be with Sarah after the manner of women. Therefore, Sarah laughed within herself, saying, after I am waxed old, shall I have pleasure, my Lord being old also? And there's unbelief. She laughs. Not the laugh of joy, but the laugh of unbelief. I'm old. Am I going to have pleasure now? This age, my master, my Lord, as Peter brings out in his epistle, 1 Peter 3, verse 13. The Lord said unto Abram, wherefore did Sarah laugh, saying, shall I of a surety bear a child which am old? God heard her laughter, and God knew the sort of laughter it was. And he goes on to say in verse 14, is anything too hard for the Lord? Praise his name, there's not. At the time appointed, I will return unto thee according to the time of life, and Sarah shall have a son. Even though Sarah disbelieved, even though she is unbelieving, the Lord still repeats his promise. But men and women, look at verse 15. Then Sarah denied, saying, I laugh not. She was afraid. Her unbelief led to other sins. We're going to see that in this passage in Genesis 12 as well. But the verse doesn't stop there in verse 15. It says, and he said, that is the pre-incarnated appearance of Christ. He said, nay, but thou didst laugh. God pointed out her sin. It's not just a trivial thing to be unbelieving. God has to deal with it. And he points it out. Sarah, thou didst laugh. You know, there's another consequence if we come back to our passage. That is a forsaking of worship. Verse 10 indirectly tells us that he left Bethel. And the place of the altar and the worship of God. Bethel, of course, you will know, as a good Bible student, means the house of God. That is the last recorded place of residence. That is where he had called upon the name of the Lord. You lift your eyes up to verse 8. He removed from thence unto a mountain in the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west, Ai on the east, and there he built an altar unto the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. He builds the altar, the place of sacrifice, the place of the blood shedding. It's there that he worships God. And it's public worship because the Canaanite is in the land. And it's there that he calls on the name of the Lord in prayer on the basis of the sacrifice. But in verse 10 it says he goes to sojourn down in Egypt. He leaves Bethel. He leaves the place of worship. And from the moment he does so, isn't it significant that there's no mention of Abraham in the remainder of this chapter of him worshiping God? There's no mention of him praying unto God. He doesn't go back to the air of the Chaldees. That would be apostasy. He goes down into Egypt. That's bad enough. Dear believer, where there's a forsaking of public worship and of prayer unto God, then the route is always downwards. Think of Jonah. Having heard the message from God, he was to go to Nineveh and preach unto it, warn them. It says that he went down to Joppa. And at that ship that was prepared there in Joppa, he went down into the sides of it, and there he slept. And when he was tossed overboard, it was in the belly of the great fish. Then he went down into the depths. You see, men and women, this is a very real consequence of not trusting in God, but trusting in ourselves and trusting even in others above God. Conversely, the other side of that coin is the only route upwards is by trusting in the Lord. And trusting Him, you will find yourself wanting to worship Him more and more. You will desire to be in God's house with other believers. You will consider the Lord's day to be a joy, not something that is have to be endured. And you will receive much as you go on with God. You'll want to worship the Lord as He has dictated to us in His Word. Hebrews chapter 10 reminds us we're not to forsake the assembling of ourselves together, as the manner of some is, as you see the day approaching. If we didn't believe that that meant the people of God coming out to God's house, then I tell you, we wouldn't have bothered renovating this church. We wouldn't have bothered. I tell you another consequence. It was dependence on self. You see, when unbelief gets in, then often the next step is to in growing confidence, having a growing confidence in oneself. And that is what happened to Abraham. When he neared Egypt, there was a reality of a danger that came to his heart and mind. And that was, if they knew Sarah was his wife, and Sarah was a good-looking woman, and if they knew that she was his wife, then his life would be in danger, and they might kill him for her. Look at the words of verse 11. It came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai, his wife, behold, now I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. She was of goodly appearance. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, this is his wife, and they will kill me, but they will save thee alive. Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it might be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. And so, having ceased to trust God, he fell back in his own devices for her protection. And he tells Sarai to tell them that she was his sister. It was a half-truth. She was his half-sister. But it was a whole lie. No matter how Abram tried to excuse it, it still was untruth. And so now the sin of unbelief is added to by lies. And he gets Sarai to lie too. And it involves other people. It's growing all the time. And this passage that is here for us, it is there that we might learn from what happens when there's a ceasing of trusting in God. The consequences are unthinkable. Not only is worship forsaken, not only is the walk affected, but it envelops others, and often our nearest and dearest. You just read with me again what happened to Sarai. Look at verse 14. It came to pass that when Abram was come into Egypt, the Egyptians beheld the woman that she was very fair. So Abram wasn't delusional. She was a good-looking woman. And the Egyptians saw that. Verse 15. The princes also of Pharaoh saw her and commended her before Pharaoh. Look at this. And the woman was taken into Pharaoh's house. Can you imagine that? Unthinkable. She's taken into his house. Maybe we could read, she's taken into his harem. She's just among the rest of the concubines. And Abram has no longer any control over his wife. And he certainly has no control over Pharaoh. He can do what he wants to Sarai, thinking that she was his sister. What anguish! For understand that although Abram had benefited, and we'll look at this in a moment, verse 16, he entreated Abram well for her sake. He entreated Abram well. It indicates he was greatly enriched. He was a material gainer by his sin. But what compensation would there be for his loss? What compensation? Am I preaching to one this morning, and this is the road that you're on? You've left off trusting in the Lord. And by inference, even you've left off the worship of God. And you're depending upon self. And it has brought with you your wealth and your possessions. But truth be told, ultimately, it has brought utter loss to you. And maybe no one else can detect it in you. You might be able to put on the good clothes on the Lord's day. If the church doors were open, you would be in through them. But it's just going through a form. You see, men and women, that is why God has warned us all. Now we read in Proverbs chapter 3, it's often I can witness it. It's often spoken at a wedding. But you know, here are verses that it's not only for a newly married couple. It's for every child of God every day of the week. Verse 5, trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not on thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy paths. That's why God has given us such verses as that. And you need to heed that word. And man or woman, young person, if you do heed that word, the Lord will be merciful unto you. And he'll be merciful unto this church. There's one final thought. From the consequences there is the contempt. How must Abram have felt? Sarah had been taken from him. She's gone from his side. She's now held in the house of Pharaoh. He thought that Sarah would be, he would be his protection for her, but that wasn't so now. All because of Abram's sin, of trusting in himself, failing to trust in the Lord, maybe even following the example of the Canaanites. I have no doubt that as Abram looked out from his place there at Bethel, he would have seen the Canaanites leaving their homes and going down to Egypt. And he followed them. He did exactly the same thing. You know, the believer has no business to copy the world. No business. Romans chapter 12, in the words of verse 2, and be not conformed to this world, but be ye transformed by the renewing of your mind, that ye may prove what is that good and acceptable and perfect will of God. We're not to be aping the world's ways or following their ways. We're to be transformed. How many have turned from trusting in God to their own devices? and to copying the world's ways. And they do so because they pretend to cherish something or someone. Yet, is it not the case that that which they cherish the most is that which they end up losing? Abram, in his own thinking, he knew that Sarah was a lovely woman. And he cherished her the most. And yet he devises a plan and he ends up losing that which he cherishes. I said to you earlier that Abram was well entreated by the world. Look at verse 16. He entreated Abram well for her sake. He had sheep and oxen, and he asses, men servants, maid servants, and she asses and camels. He was well entreated, but yet his losses were greater. He had lost his wife. There's no altar in Egypt. He'd lost that. There's no fellowship with God. I've lost that. No mention of that. No public worship. He's lost that. No new promises given. Nothing but a desolate home and a wretched guilt of having done wrong. Like the prodigal, while there may have been the initial spell of pleasure, yet he loses it all. The losses bring him down to the level of the swine. And in such a place, there is no recourse but to retrace the way that he came and to go back and do his first work. But you see, only God in His mercy would ever get Abram and Sarai out of Egypt untainted. At least in Sarai's part. But not before there was the contempt and the shame and the humiliation. God intervened by way of the plague so that Pharaoh was awakened to the fact something wrong here. It may have been that God spoke to Pharaoh as to the reason of that plague. Says verse 17, the Lord plagued Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai, Abram's wife. It may have been that the Lord spoke unto him, but what shame when Abram was faced with the questions. Verse 18, Pharaoh called Abram and said, what is this that thou hast done unto me? Why didst thou not tell me that she was thy wife? Why sayest thou, she is my sister, so that I might have taken her to be my wife? Now therefore, behold thy wife, take her and go thy way. Abram's sin is exposed. He suffers rebuke from an ungodly man, and there is a deep humiliation in what he had done. You know, sometimes it has been the case that an unchristian has rebuked the child of God, and rightly so. And there's shame, because a bad testimony, a bad witness has been left. God intervened in this whole affair for Sarah's sake. Since, in effect, it was no direct fault of her own where she found herself. But God intervened also for Abram's sake. And dear child of God, I don't know which is the greatest grace, that of saving grace, where the Lord calls us from our sin unto Himself and we're born again of His Spirit. Or that of preserving grace, where He preserves us and we're kept by the power of God. Or of restoring grace, where He draws us back to Himself. I don't know which of those is the greatest. But you know, Abram experienced them all. Humiliated. They were then expelled from Egypt. They were cast out. And while it's not a pretty sight, because the effects of sin are never pretty, the effects of unbelief and not trusting the Lord are not pretty, the effects of leaving off the public worship of God is not pretty, yet the good thing was that Abram returned to Bethel. And Abram got back to the place of the altar and to the worship of his God. The last words say they sent him away and his wife and all that he had. And we come to verse 3 in chapter 13. It says, and he went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel. He got back from where he started. There's a little footnote that I want to leave in closing. For while it is certainly implied within this passage that Abram repented of his sin, he had to. And he was restored. God restored him unto himself, and he returned to the altar, as I've read in the words of verse 4, or I haven't read, but I will read now, chapter 13, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. He's restored back to the place of worship. He's back where he should never have left. Yet I draw your attention back to verse 16 that we read together in chapter 12. How Abram was treated well for Sarai's sake. Verse 16 tells us what he acquired in Egypt. Part of that was woman servants, maid servants. Now you turn over to chapter 16, verse 1. Now Sarah, Abram's wife, bare him no children, and she had an handmaid, an Egyptian, whose name is Hagar. What's the footnote? The footnote is this, that while God can heal the backslider, and while God can forgive us of our sin completely, and he does, yet as a consequence of failing to trust him, God can leave something that will keep us humble. And he can leave us with that reminder of where we fail to depend upon him. And it is that we will never make light of sin again. God can leave that in our life. He left it in Abram's life. There's the handmaiden. There's the Egyptian. And you don't need me to tell you or preach to you the trouble that came via Hagar. That even lasts until this very day in the Middle East. Because Abram didn't trust in the Lord. What about application for ourselves? I finish by reading to you Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 19. Thine own wickedness shall correct thee, and thy backsliding shall reprove thee. Know therefore, and see that it is an evil thing and bitter, that thou hast forsaken the Lord thy God, and that my fear is not in thee, saith the Lord of hosts. I leave the Lord to lay that verse in your heart. Oh, to God that we would not be guilty of this in these days, of trusting in ourselves, of trusting in someone else. No matter who they are. But oh, that we would trust in the Lord for his glory's sake. And trust in the Lord, he will bring us through our circumstance. The Lord bless his word to our hearts this morning for his own name's sake.